you read that? Could you read? Couldn't you read that? I'm surprised at you. Let's try that again. You want to hear that again? How about that? You're wondering why this is a celebration of something that you should know about. This is Learn the Code Week. Did you know that? I'm serious. This is Learn the Code Week. You know, you hear about all these fantastic weeks about that go around the world all the time. You know, like National Pickle Week, National Rubber Crutch Week. National Preserve the Cockroach Week, you know, all kinds of weeks. Yeah, well, there is one of those, by the way. And to me, this is the one that sneaks by generally without any recognition from anybody in the mass media. And tonight I'm going to give it official recognition because it is actually this week. This is National Learn the Code Week. Now, there's millions of guys out there who have promised themselves one day they're going to learn the code. I mean, I'm serious about that. You probably don't know that every day you walk down the street, you walk along 6th Avenue, 5th Avenue, 7th Avenue, you have passed probably in an hour 250 guys who at one time or another have said to themselves, I just got to buckle down and learn the code. Now, if I could take 2 or 3 weeks of concentrated work, I could at least get the basics, and then by the end of the summer, maybe 15, 20 words a minute. And after that, you know, it'd be no problem. I could pass the code test and I could forget it, you know. To those guys tonight, we dedicate tonight's program, Learn the Code Week. And I'm going to give you a little lesson. Would you like to hear some code, first of all? Now, for those of you who don't know what the code is, we are going to talk about the code briefly. The code is another language which began to be used right after the Civil War. Most people date it later, but actually it's not so, because there was a thing called the Morse Code, which was invented by Samuel Morse, a famous American inventor and painter, believe it or not, and he created the Morse Code. Well, we're not sending... what I've just been sending to you is not the Morse Code, per se. That's the International Morse Code, which is another kettle of fish. The first code, which was the Morse Code, was used for telegraph and generally consisted of a series of clicks. Generally, it did consist of a series of clicks at varying spacing. You know, this is when you go to see a movie that has John Wayne and he's out in the Old West of the 1870s. And he goes down to the telegraph office. And you know, by the way, in every Western movie, the old guy at the telegraph office will get killed before the movie is over. He will get killed because he has sent the message that the marshal brought in about how they should bring the troops in to get rid of the Claggett boys. You know, the Claggett boys, that's Jack Palance and his crowd, you know. And the old guy down at the telegraph office, we know he's going to get killed. He's sort of a gray guy, and he's got this green eye shield, and he sits there and he says, you sure you want to send this? And Wayne says, send it, buddy. I told you, send it. I'm the marshal, and I says, send it. And he reads this message. It says, send Company G of the federal troops immediately. Claggett boys acting up. And he says, well, all right, but don't say I didn't warn you. And he sits down, and he goes, we see a shot now of the Claggett boys 4 miles away. One guy's got a pair of wire cutters, and he's up on the pole, and he's cutting the wire just in the middle. See? And the old man says, I don't know. Something's wrong here. I'm not getting through. Somebody's cut the wire. And we know what's going to happen now. Wayne buckles on his Colt 44s, and we know where the scene's going to go. Well, all right, now that's that's Morse. That is Morse code they're using, which is another type of code. The international Morse is the type that you always hear. You know, there's a guy sitting in his radio room on the great ship, and you see the waves coming up over the bow, and the captain is the only guy left, and the ship is sinking under the waves, and this brave radio man is sitting at his desk, and he's pounding it out on his brass key. What did I say? SOS Titanic is what I've just sent. And this is international code. Now, this is the code that every guy has promised himself one day he's going to learn. And you know what I ought to do tonight just to make you learn it? Do the entire show in code. Now, there's no, you know, really, seriously, there's no law against that, because after all, you can do a show in Ukrainian, and to people who don't speak Ukrainian, that's a very, very esoteric code. And I can assure you that there's a lot of guys sitting out there listening tonight who actually can read what I'm saying. Right? Right, boys? Oh, that was a good one. Now, guys all over are driving into culverts and that, yelling and laughing, and everybody else in the car says, "What's this nut doing? What is all this about? You know, what's he saying?" Well, I have just said something only for the guys who can read code. And I might as well tell you about this code thing, how I was reminded about it. Today, I'm walking along 6th Avenue, beautiful day, you know. I'm walking along, and all of a sudden, I hear this horn. You hear horns constantly in the city. And once you learn the code, you can't help it. Your ear hears it all the time. And I'm walking down the street, and I hear this horn go. Now, I don't know whether this guy was doing it purposely or not. He said one of the worst things I've ever heard said out loud on 6th Avenue by a grown-up person for everybody to hear. I could... One single four-letter word. And he didn't repeat it. It just came racking out of this huge traffic jam. There must have been 50. It was down there by Macy's. It must have been 50 cars and one big mob, see? And the light changed. I hear this horn. Blah, blah, blah. You know, and I'm not going to send it to you, so don't worry. One big blast. And I turned around, and I couldn't tell which car it was. They moved on. See? And I thought, holy smokes. Well, you know, when you start to learn the code, now, this to me, is one of the great unsung achievements of my life when I was a kid, was learning the code. Now, I'm going to do a show tonight about amateur radio, if you don't mind. And it's really not about amateur radio. It's about that impossible dream. You know, by the way, that's one of the corniest songs ever written. You know, the impossible dream. La-da-da-cha-da-da-cha. Well, there are things that are and seem impossible in the beginning. And I am about 13 when this happened. Little did I realize that I was lucky. Because like any foreign language, if you start to learn it young enough, it is much easier than when you try to do it later. And that doesn't mean that older people can't learn. It does mean, however, that you put up a kind of, I suppose, unconscious resistance to learning, which makes it harder to learn. But I'm a little kid, see, I'm 13 years old. And I've been bitten by this amateur radio bug. I wanted to be a ham. Well, in those days, to get to be a ham, you had to pass your general code test right from the start. They didn't have a novice class that they have today. And that meant that you had to pass a minimum of 13 words a minute right from the start. You had to go right in it, like, you know, plunge right in. Well, I didn't have any friends who were studying to be hams, which made it almost impossible. That when you're studying a foreign language, it's much easier to study it with somebody around you who speaks it, or at least who's studying it with you, so the two of you can say, Yo shtet kemanik kedvish hogatoim. And the other guy says, enem purim merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup. You know, it makes it a little better. By the way, speaking of strange and exotic products of our time, this is WOR in New York, and let's hit them with a whole bunch of little bippies while they're still moving.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am speaking to you from a deserted field somewhere in the western
commercial.
United States. As I look around, I can see the men and mechanics of Dr. Pepper waiting anxiously around their trucks. Eddie, Dr. Pepper's most veteran driver, stands near the fire as the kid, his first run before him, turns and says,
Gee, Eddie, I hope there won't be any trouble.
Don't worry, kid.
Dawn is beginning to lighten the eastern sky as everyone waits to hear the final words from the captain before they leave for New York.
Men of the Dr. Pepper Squadron, this is the captain. You have all received your orders. The road ahead will not be easy, but knowing you as I have, I am confident that despite the pitfalls and misunderstandings each of you shall face, you shall take Dr. Pepper to New York in victory. Nothing can stop us now.
There you have it. The trucks are speeding out with the words of the captain ringing in the ears of every driver. Dr. Pepper's coming to New York, May 18th. Nothing can stop us now.
Here's New York Mets stars Ron Swoboda and Ed Cranepool for your local Ford dealer.
Take me out to that Ford man. That's where I want to be.
Take it, Ron.
He's giving big discounts on all his cars.
The biggest savings that there ever was.
Oh, it's save on a new Ford. $25,000 he's got.
Yeah.
So it's go. See your Ford man today. Get a deal that's hot.
Ron, our singing's not great, but we're telling the truth.
You said it, Eddie, and right now your local Ford dealer's teamed up with neighboring Ford dealers to form the world's biggest automobile discount center.
Over 25,000 Fords must go. He's discounting like crazy.
And you know, Ed, with his new computerized car locator, he'll find the exact model you want as fast as it takes you to steal second.
Faster, I hope.
So buy now and save more at the world's biggest automobile discount center.
Yeah, it's go. See that Ford man today and you'll save.
Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so, Swoboda. You're sold out. Say it ain't so. That was Ron Swoboda. Who was the other one? Cranepool. Hey, can't say it ain't so. Let's see. We've done Dr. Pepper. Oh, Great Shanghai, of course. And we'd like to recommend the Great Shanghai Scarf for this weekend. And by the way, the crowd that runs the Great Shanghai has just opened a new restaurant out in Stony Brook, right near the university. It's called the Little Mandarins at Route 25A at Nichols Road in Stony Brook. And if you're walking around town this weekend, you know, come into New York and you're getting a little restless and you want some interesting type scarf, we'd like to recommend that you go up to the Great Shanghai at 103rd and Broadway, which is right near the IRT subway station. In fact, it comes right up in the kitchen there. And you run out, hit the ground running, and for $2.50, from 11 until 3, all the food you want to scoff. They have a big Chinese Sunday brunch up there. I never can pronounce those Chinese words correctly. Incidentally, Barry Farber tells me that's a Mandarin word, blunch. He says it's an old Shinto expression. And, it means eat until you're stuffed and make like pig. I mean, you know, that's ideologically speaking. I don't want to confuse the issue here. But this is from 11 until 3, and if you're a kid under 4 feet tall, you get in for $1.50, which means you can even eat more. So that's the Great Shanghai. And we have one other one here. Let's see. You got another one? Hit the bippy. Pow.
I'm home, Harriet.
You ready?
Oh, Pat, we just have to put the suitcases in the car and go. You did remember to pick up some money at the bank.
Nope.
What?
How can we go on a vacation without money?
Simple. We'll just use our Chevron National credit card.
Great, Henry. What are we supposed to do, sleep on a gas pump?
Now, just hang on. That Chevron National credit card is good at Howard Johnson's Motor Lodges, Ramada Inns, and Master Host Inns, not to mention Hertz Car Rentals.
Well, I didn't know that.
Not only that, I can charge gas, oil, and even repairs at more than 24,000 Chevron service stations across the country.
Say, that Chevron credit card is really great. Isn't Chevron the company with service stations that look like little tropical islands with tropical plants and everything?
That's Chevron Island, all right.
Do you suppose we could stop in at one just so you could keep your promise?
What promise?
Well, you always said you'd take me to the islands.
Yes, another one of those great places, you know, like Thunderbird Country, Marlborough Country, Chevron Island, all those places. I wonder if any really on top of it tourist agency is planning a tour of all those places. You know, you can spend the week in Marlborough Country, get yourself tanned and bronzed at the flat-bellied, and then you can go and you lay in the sand at Chevron Island for a while. I don't know. It's getting out of hand. You know, I want to tell you, I must say, speaking of if you'd like to visit the truly one of the most fantastic countries of our time, I mean, it's practically unexplored country. I mean, truly unexplored country. And it's dangerous country, too. I mean, it's the kind of country that has caused many people to sicken and to walk away with disgust when they visited. Other people have gone away applauding, cheering wildly. What is this country? How would you like to stroll live through the unexplored country of Gene Shepherd's mind? He'll be open for business tomorrow night at the Newark State College, Union, New Jersey, at 8 o'clock. I snuck up on you that time. And we're going to do a big show. This is going to be the last show of the year, by the way, in this area, certainly. And it's going to be Newark State College in Union, New Jersey, 8 o'clock tomorrow night, Theater of the Performing Arts. And the tickets are on sale at the door. And by the way, you better come early because there aren't many left. That's Theater of Performing Arts, Newark State College, Union, New Jersey, tomorrow at 8. All right? I'm sorry. that's a... Now I'll have to, you know, I'm not going to be deterred. I'm not going to be, not like the mailman. Rain and snow will not stop me. I'm going to continue to celebrate Learn the Code Week. And I want all of you who have been promising yourself to learn the code to look right at your radio, raise your right hand right now, and say, I solemnly swear and I promise the old Shep, who's just sweating blood every night for me, and I don't, you know, it's free, and he just gives him everything he's got for me every night. I solemnly swear to learn the code in the next 200 years. Okay? Well, I'll tell you what happened with me. I'm a kid, see? And I must say it was great discipline now that I look back on it. But at the time, it was a real drag. And I wanted to be a ham. I really got the bug, just tremendously, so much so that I would dream about it. I'd think about it. I would imagine myself talking to people. And, of course, when I got to be a ham, that was very, very young for a ham. For those of you who think that hams are kids, this is one of the great misconceptions that the public has. I would say probably not more than one out of 50 amateurs is under 20. Wouldn't you say that, Herb, roughly? But most amateur radio operators are men of mature, solid, many engineering backgrounds. Many, many of the hams you talk to are electronic engineers around the world. And very, really, comparatively few of them are actually licensed hams. Don't confuse the novice, because many novices never go on to get their ticket. And certainly don't confuse the CBs with the hams. Oh, no, please. And so... When I had to get this ham ticket. And unfortunately, the only ham that I knew was a guy who was a father of a friend of mine. And he was a very official guy. But I would sneak over to his house. See, I'd pretend like I wanted to see Ray, who was my, you know, my friend, quote. But he was one of these guys, you know, I didn't think much about him one way or the other. But he had a father who was a ham. And I would go over to Ray's house just to look into this guy's room. And he had this fantastic transmitter. And it was a rack and panel, 6-foot rack and panel job. I mean, he was running a full KW. And here it was, sitting up against the wall, and he had all the lead-in wires. He had the 600-ohm lead, and he had the 300-ohm lead, all the wires coming into the window, big insulators. And he had this big horseshoe-shaped desk that he had made. And around the horseshoe-shaped desk was his beam antenna control. I'll never forget watching him work his beam. And for those of you who don't know what a beam antenna, it's like a... Well, you know what a television antenna is like. Well, this is really, in many cases, a tiny beam. It's a little beam antenna. Now, if you can imagine one that, instead of being used to pick up signals, is used to radiate signals. And from time to time, when you drive around, look around and you'll see this big antenna on top of some guy's house that looks like a huge, oversized television antenna, usually three great big elements up there. And this thing is driven by a motor. And that motor is down around the roof. You usually can't see the engine or the motor for the thing from the street, but it's driven by an electric motor. And down in his shack, and all hams tend to call their place of operation the shack. It's just a term. Down in the shack, he's got this control unit for the beam. And it usually consists of a big illuminated dial with a map. Some of them have a big globe on it. Others just have a compass rose, you know, 360-degree compass setting. So he'll turn this knob, and up on the roof, the antenna will turn majestically. And down below, you see this meter pointing at Africa. Well, he had this big golden dial. Now, that's what got me first, that golden dial of his beam antenna. And his name was Gil, and he would take this knob, and he would turn it. And you'd see this big pointer going... And it would point at India. And then he'd turn up his receiver gain. He had this big speaker up on the wall in a metal cabinet, magnificent Hammerland receiver, and all of his equipment would light up. And he had this JT-30 static microphone, kind of a bullet-shaped mic in front of him. And he would sit there and talk to guys in places like India. I mean, he'd talk to India. Well, I can't tell you what this did to me. Now, obviously, it doesn't do much to many of you. But to me, as a 13-year-old kid, in fact, today, to this day, it still flips me. And he's talking to India. Well, I had to be a ham. Absolutely. Just absolutely nothing else. I had to be a ham. And I threw myself completely into this. And luckily, he was the kind of guy that helped me. This older guy says, well, here, he said, I'll get you a book and I'll get you these things, and you can study them. You have to study them. And he gave me a license manual. Well, a license manual is published by the American Radio Relay League that is a technical manual that covers the examination, the written examination that is given to an amateur radio operator. And it includes things like schematic diagrams of final stages of transmitters. All this has to be done from memory. It includes things like schematic diagrams of Class A, B, 1 modulators. It includes schematic diagrams of various types of oscillators, tri-tet, doubler oscillators, and so on down the line, doubler buffer stages. It includes all involved discussion of Class C amplifiers versus Class B, 1 amplifiers, various modulation systems ranging from plate modulation through screen grid, cathode, single sideband, the whole bit. See, fantastic panoply of very involved technical stuff. Now, remember, I'm 13. Well, I wanted to be a ham. Well, I read that book from cover to cover. Didn't understand a word of it. But I read it from cover to cover, right zap, in one night. One night. Well, then I still didn't understand of it, see. And Gil had given me an amateur radio handbook, which is a thicker version of the same thing. Beautiful pictures of ham radio gear all the way through it, see. And I tried to read that, struggling my way through it. And over they repeated one thing. You had to learn the code. That part of getting your amateur license, and one of the most important parts, not only do you pass this written examination that involves schematics, involves knowledge of theory and knowledge of international law governing amateur radio, you have to pass this code test. And that's something you can't fake your way. You cannot fake learning the code. You just either do or you don't. Well, I had built the year before a little shortwave receiver, a three-tube shortwave receiver that I had gotten as a kit for Christmas. And, of course, I always would sit there and listen to stuff like England, or I would listen to Germany, or I would listen to Spain on shortwave. Well, now I began to listen to the stuff that was in between, the what they call press wireless. One of the chapters in this book was how to learn the code, and they started out by saying, you know, one way to learn the code is to listen to shortwave code broadcasts. Now, for those of you who don't know what press wireless is, a lot of the international communication, even to this day, in fact, it's as much today as it ever was, is carried on between great organizations and between nations and continents by Morse code. They have a thing called press wireless, which transmits hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of words of international news. It just comes out on code, and you can copy this code if you're fast enough. Well, this stuff ranges in speed, if you're listening to ship operators, all the way on, from ship operators all the way on up to press wireless. It ranges in speed from about 25 words a minute, which is about the minimum of commercial operation, all the way on up to, maybe 75, 80 words a minute, till finally you get to the automatic transmitters, and they're transmitting at upwards of 800, 900 words a minute, which, of course, you can't even copy. But this is roughly like somebody saying to you, well, you have to learn French, right? And you say, yeah, well, I'll tell you what you do. You learn French by translating Proust. You start right out. It's roughly like that. See, that's the way you learn French. Well, I sat down. I'm 13. I don't know any better, see. And in the book, it said that any word, any letter you hear, just once you memorize the code, any letter you hear, write it down. Write it down immediately. And even if you miss the next 5 minutes and you hear another one, write it down too. Well, I sat down and I memorized the code. I just took blocks of the coded words and the code letters, and I memorized them like A. I would sit there myself over and over again. And of course, they said, you have to learn the code by hearing it, dit-da. Don't think of it as dot-dash. It's dit-da. Dit-da. Well, by George, Captain Ahab himself, dit-da. Captain Gladstone just walked in. Dit-da. Da-dit-dit-dit. Da-dit-da-dit. Well, I learned right. Instinctively, I learned right. And so I would say to myself, I would sit in class, in school, while everybody else is talking about the geography of Peru, or they're talking about Silas Marner. I'm sitting there going, dit-da, da-dit-dit-dit. I just said to you A, B, C, D, E, F. A, B, C. E, dit, F. Over and over and over and over again. Until finally I memorized the entire alphabet in one afternoon. Just over and over. If you concentrate, you'd be amazed at what your mind can do. And that night, after going over this thing, so much so that I cut out everything else in my life. I'm just memorizing this code. And that night, I'm asleep, see, and I could hear it going through my head. I'm hearing this code over and over again. And so I started to copy high-speed press, and It was talk about hell. This stuff is coming. I'll tell you what it roughly sounds like. I'll try to do it. I'll give you a brief, very, very rough approximation of the way it comes out. Roughly, handheld or a hand fist keying. That's about 25 words a minute, what you heard there, between 25 and 26 words a minute. And this stuff is coming out. I got these earphones. And my father keeps looking in the front bedroom. You know, my mother keeps peering in. They keep thinking, what's all those noises coming out? And I am writing it down. I can still remember so clearly. It was like it was yesterday. I have these big yellow, I bought myself some yellow pads with green lines on it, and I'm writing down B. I hear, doop, 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 doop. I write down B. And then this stuff, stuff pouring past, hour after hour after hour, and then I'd write down L. I heard an L. Hour after hour after hour after hour after hour. Of the stuff, I worked from about 7 o'clock at night till they made me go to bed at 10 o'clock. Solid, didn't stop. The next morning, I got up 2 hours before I'm going to go to school. I have to be in school at 8 o'clock, see, 8:15. I got up something like 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm sitting in my... I couldn't stop. It was unbelievable. It caught me like some... like Captain Ahab. Maybe that's why I dig Ahab. It caught me like some quicksand got me. And I'm sitting in there in the front bedroom. It's still dark out. The sun is just barely coming. I'm writing it down. I'm writing it down. And then I remember that first day, after 1 week of working, 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 I must have put in 10 hours a day, that first moment that I got an actual word, and I remember what the word is, and I still remember it, and every time I hear that word, it automatically triggers little things of relationship deep inside me. It's this is the first word that I actually copied. From. I caught a word that came out of press wireless that was being sent from England. From. Well, from that minute on, it was even worse. I mean, a little success will drive you even beyond what you ordinarily thought you were capable of doing. Then I began to hear P-H-E. The. Then I began to hear this word. B-E. Then I began to pick up words like this. You know, common words like H-E. He. Day by day, I can see more words coming out. And then finally, one day, I copied press wireless, and it was a bright, sunny afternoon. I'll never forget it. It suddenly all happened together. Have you ever learned a foreign language? Any of you? Well, if you've ever learned a foreign language at all, it suddenly seems to hit you all at once. It's like learning mathematics, that aha experience. Well, on one afternoon, after working and working and working, I must have worked, oh, it must have been 3 months. One afternoon, I started to copy code. And I was listening to this station that was broadcasting from Gibraltar. It was a press wireless station. I'm 13 years old. I got a number 2 Ticonderoga pencil in my hand. I've got this yellow pad with the green lines. And you know, the cover of the pad had this big Indian head on it, you know. And I am writing down code as fast as it's coming over my earphone. I copied code for about 5 minutes straight. It was fantastic. It was like I was listening. I could understand the language. I could understand it. This guy is talking to me. He is telling me that in the foreign markets today, the price of wheat went up 10%, and in Gibraltar this afternoon, it was reported by reliable sources, it's coming over as clear as somebody's talking to me. That minute, I became a different person. I knew something nobody else in the entire neighborhood, and as far as I could tell, in the entire town outside of Gill knew. I knew code. And in the meantime, I had been studying that license manual over and over. I read the license manual alone. I must have read it 25 times from cover to cover. And the code. That code began to just envelop my life. It began to cover me up with sounds. And ever since that time, I have been very sensitive to sounds. Sensitive to music and the rhythm and the beat of sounds. Because, you see, 90% of code is beat, rhythm. Once you master the rhythm, it's just like music. Once you master the beat and the rhythm of music, man, you're a musician. And once you master the beat and the rhythm of code, you know the code. It's coming. And so, I at the same time, I had gotten myself a key. I went down to the Allied store in Chicago one weekend, and I bought myself a key for $1.79. And I built a one-tube code oscillator. And I continued to send to myself over and over and over again until I got so that I could send with the same sound that these commercial guys were sending with. I never studied the hams. I never listened to the hams, primarily because my receiver was so bad that it couldn't separate the hams. So I was listening only to the commercial guys, which is probably why I became so good at code. And so I copied their sending. And there's a thing called the Lake Erie Swing. Have you ever heard of the Lake Erie Swing? That's a famous swing. It's a Great Lakes code operator. I'll give you an idea what the Lake Erie Swing is like. Now, if I were to send conventional straight code, send the word, it would go like this. That's the word B-U-T. I'll repeat it. B-U-T. See if you can spot the three letters. Okay, B-U-T. Now I'll send it the way it should be sent. But, now here's the Lake Erie Swing. You notice the difference? Now, let's take the word T-H-E. 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 Here's the Lake Erie Swing. Now, I will show it to you on the word come. There's a da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's the Lake Erie Swing. Well, unknowingly, I had been copying the commercial guys. And they sent with that lake, that beautiful sort of a poetic swing to their fist. It's like sending code with an accent. And it really is. Well, when I went up to take my exam, my license exam, I was in this huge room with all these grown-up men. And they began to send the code. And I was very tense and nervous. It was 8 o'clock in the morning in the old post office building in Chicago. And that was the first thing they gave you was the code, because they eliminated a lot of people right away. In fact, less than 30% of the people who applied for an amateur radio license actually passed the examination. And so here I was with all these grown-up men, and I put the cans on, and they started to send this code. It was unbelievably easy. This stuff was coming over like baby talk. With one hand, with one ear shut, I'm writing this code down. I could see the guy next to me, a guy about 45, sweating. His pencil is falling out of his head. And I'm just writing it down, you know. Oh, come on, get sending this stuff, man. I finished the receiving test. I copied it perfectly. And then you had to take a sending test where the guy listened to you send. He says, would you please send this text? And I go, he says, hey, kid, where'd you pick up the Lake Erie Swing? That was the first time I knew I had it, the Lake Erie Swing. Well, from that time on, I recognized that I had mastered something that was very special. And within a year and a half, I had passed a 45-word-a-minute ARRL code test exam, which is extremely fast code. In fact, the best I ever did at one point was 53 words a minute with a mill. Actually working on it. But code is like a lot of things in your life. It's like typing. It's like learning French. You don't ever forget it. It's like so much part of your body that it's there forever. It's just like the marrow of your bones. And so today, I hope I didn't bore you with this, but let's send a little code here. Say goodbye to the game. By the way, that's the Lake Erie swing at its most extreme. And so, I would like to, in my own way, celebrate Learn Code Week. Get down to it, man. Listen, and remember, it's all like many things in life. It's rhythm. It's the beat. Either you got it or you ain't. And there's only one way to find out. Listen.